Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
I thought in here I thought it was over. I'm your big dumpy host with an ugly face and a big butt. Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
We are the Handsome Voice Comics Hour. Your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. We are in the same room.
And I'm just gonna...
Oh!
I'm just gonna do that.
He broke my arm.
Yeah, it's broken.
I can't read comics now.
What kind of comics are you reading that takes both arms?
I don't need to reveal all my reading techniques, alright? They just require both hands and both arms, by extension.
Yes.
And now my arm hurts.
Good.
And my shoulders hurt.
Good.
We went kayaking.
We did. It was brutal.
It was pretty hard on us. You can tell that we spend most of our times indoors reading comic books.
I don't know. What are you going to
do? Well, actually, We don't really spend most of our time reading comic books.
Yeah.
Most of our free time, or a lot of our free time, reading comic books. But that does not prepare you for kayaking.
Yeah.
Well, even if you read kayaking comic books. Kayak Comics. It's a new imprint.
Yep.
From Boom.
Well, now after they start making that Downton Abbey comic.
I don't know if they're going to be able to get licensing for that.
Mad Rupert's just going to draw it all by herself. It doesn't matter.
Patreon it.
Hey, I will crowdfund. I will crowfund her to do a Downton Abbey comic.
So, Handsomeites, yeah, we are in the same room. We've been annoying the piss out of each other for the whole weekend. So, now we're going to unleash that towards you.
All of this vitriol, you get to be the benefactors of it.
But we have a great, great week in comics to discuss. I suppose. We'll see. I think so. Eric's giving me like a shrug kind of motion.
I'm gonna keep you in suspense.
Okay. We also are reading Asterix.
Asterix.
Yeah, I have to say it with my terrible French accent.
Yes, that's the way we do.
For Nerbo Book Club, before we get to that, we are gonna get right to Weekly Floppies. Weekly Floppies is a part of the show where Eric and I read the week's books, tell you to buy or do not buy them. And you should listen to us.
Yep. And then we flop around.
Well, we do that anyway. We've been doing it the past couple days.
I know. It's been some floppy times.
I need to clean up my iPad.
It's getting a little pokey, isn't it?
It's getting...
You've been getting frustrated with it.
Yeah, it's very slow.
Just delete the books that are bad.
I have been doing that.
It's like $900 and then 27 gigs of DC books.
Not all DC. Speaking of DC, we're going to start with DC in Gotham Academy number 4. Written by Becky Cloonan and Brendan Fletcher. Art by Carl Kerschel. Colors by M. Sassy K. and Serge LaPointe.
It's a good name for a colorist.
Letters by Steve Wands. Has our opinion changed in this book, Eric?
I am liking it more and more.
Yes, I agree.
Every issue. This issue probably has the most things happening in it. I've talked with this about this book with friends, and they said it moved too slow. This one finally has some nice concrete plot points happening that I find very interesting. I am more endeared to these characters with each issue. It is an excellent and possibly the best Gotham Academy yet.
No, it's very good. I really, really, really do enjoy it. I always enjoy it. There are complaints sometimes about, there's not enough stuff happening. I don't care, honestly, even, like, in the first issues, the characters and in the world is interesting enough to me that I don't really...
I do find it, spoiler alert, horrendously creepy that Killer Croc is just living in the walls of this girl's dormitory.
Yeah.
And they're just brushing past it. Like, this is a grown man that looks like an alligator.
Crocodile.
Excuse me. I would hate to confuse those two things that are functionally identical.
But I'm I am interested to see how that works out.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to go the direction where he's peeping on people.
I don't think so either. But he's still living in the walls of a girl's dormitory.
Well, when you're Killer Croc, you got to take what you can get.
I guess so. There's not enough sewers and outhouses for him to live in.
And the art is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's nice. This Sassy K colorist,
mm-hmm.
pretty back to ass.
Yeah, it's consistently excellent. I do want to say that there's been a big push online this week by the creators and journalists, comics journalists, people trying to get this book, and I showed some distress about that, and Brendan Fletcher tweeting me back saying, yes, sales are down, please tell people to buy it. So guys, buy this book. It bums me out that it's not doing so hot.
Yeah, that sucks.
It's DC going out of their way to like try and find a new audience and do something different than most of their superhero books. I like to encourage that. And frankly, this book is amazing, so you should be buying it anyway. But you want that's how you show these companies what you want. You spend money on it.
Uh-huh.
That's the only thing they understand.
Yeah, they don't care if you pirate it.
No, they do not.
They're not like, oh, we have the most pirated book on Earth.
Yeah.
Hooray us. Now we're going to be laughing all the way to the soup line.
So I'm a buy. I definitely encourage you all to please go buy this book. Go buy all the issues. They're really fun. It's really good. It's
doesn't matter if I'm a buy.
Well, I'm assuming you're a buy. Are you a buy, Eric?
Of course I am.
Okay.
So start out with that. Put your best foot forward.
Your best foot?
Your best foot.
Both my feet are about the same. I mean, they're oriented. They're opposite of each other.
That's your best foot. That foot's gross.
Well, they're both kind of gross.
I know. That one's less gross.
Okay. But we're double buy on Gotham Academy number 4. I put the wrong number in the show notes. But next up is Gotham by Midnight number 3.
And you still didn't update it.
I know. Whatever. We know what it is. No one else sees
these. You told me via text message.
I did. I think you're smart. I trusted Eric to smart enough to know, hey, this book didn't come out.
I did buy the wrong Justice League once.
Well, I don't think that was that my fault?
It was my own student fault. Yeah, well, that's why that example was in there.
I think we didn't.
You're like, I trust you to be smart. Here's an example of me being really dumb.
Well, there's a time when neither of us read the comic before, but
that was also fine.
Yes. We are Gotham by Midnight, number 3, by Ray Fox and Ben Templesmith, I believe it is. Yes, Ben Templesmith on art with Seda Timofonte on letters. This is, I've mentioned this previously before, it's a kind of a supernatural detective uh-huh. book set in Gotham City. In the same way that Gotham Academy is Hogwarts in Gotham. This is, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like, not quite X-Files, but.
It is X-Files-y.
Yeah, I think it's more concrete than that. You're never wondering if it's real or not.
I mean, ghosts and magic
do
exist in the DC universe. They
do.
There's no reason that you can't put that in this book and make it creepy.
Although they do, you do have a cop who is unsure of all this craziness. Why are mm-hmm. we? Yeah, all that. But what did you think, Eric? I've read this before. I'm curious. You haven't read it before.
I enjoyed it a lot. It reminds me of a lot of different things that I do like and. I like seeing DC actually try different things, not just doing the same old boring, let's go into space and punch each other.
They also do it on Earth.
They punch each other on Earth?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really shaking things.
Yeah, I know. They try,
footprints on the brain.
Yeah, there you go.
Brad Meltzer, that's the guy that wrote
Brad Meltzer, right? Yes.
Meltzer, excuse me. Yeah. He has a terrible show you should watch an episode of. Where he sends people to go talk about conspiracy theories all over the planet. It's awful. He's an imbecile.
I'll cut time out of my schedule to watch the terrible show.
I want him to be hit by a ghost train.
Specifically a ghost train. Has to be a ghost train.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, then they won't see it coming.
What do you?
Then the people can talk about the conspiracy about a ghost train killing him.
What do you think about the art?
That was what I was gonna talk about before I started ranting about what an asshole that guy is and how I want him to die. No, it reminds me, only sort of vaguely, did you ever read those scary stories you read in the dark?
I have the collection downstairs.
Actually. Yeah, apparently that illustrator really didn't think much of that project, but that shit has changed the trajectory of my life.
Yes.
When I was a child, I looked at that and I'm like, ah! Something, some voice inside my brain is still screaming. From reading that as an elementary school child, they are amazing illustrations, and that is what this book makes me think of. And it is a pretty solid little story. And I'm gonna say that there's gonna be sort of episodic storytelling with a larger overarching plot, sort of a la Planetary.
Yeah, it's actually reminds me. Strangely enough, the only experience I have with this artist is with a Warren Ellis book called Fell, which is a police detective story. More noir than this, certainly not supernatural.
Okay.
But it reminds me of The New Moon Knight in a certain way, in that it's hey, look, there's one, a ghost story, and each explain all these members of this team, and it's also like a... I don't know, it's not as fantastic as BRPD, as Hellboy, but,
right.
You know, but it's has that same kind of, like, here's all these members, they're yes. all a little different, they're encountering supernatural things like that. But I like it a lot.
I was very pleased to find it this week, and I think it's good to find another DC book that works, and I'm excited to see more. We're up issue 3,
mm-hmm.
so we're still... We're all relatively new to this. I think it's worth probably going back looking at 1 and 2.
I have one if you'd like to read it.
I would like to check it out.
Though I do, it would be remiss of me not to mention that the person who wrote this comic is also the person who wrote your favorite comic from last year.
Ooh.
Intersect.
Yeah, fuck it.
Ray Fox.
Intersect 3 is also out.
It is. We are not reading that comic book. But I'm a buy. That's not clear. I'm a buy. Nuh-uh.
As am I. I'm a bi.
All right, there we
in
go.
Your eye.
Dr. Seuss. We're Seussing it up uh-huh. today. With its double bi, Gotham by Midnight, number 1. On our indie book of the week, it is Bitch Planet, number 2. Been waiting for this one ever since number 1 came out. It's a really good comic book.
They're all good. They are both opened up on Hey Kids Patriarchy.
Hey Kids Patriarchy. Yeah, written by Kelly C. DeConnick, art by Valentine Late De Leandro, colors by Chris Peter, letters by Clayton Cowles. We get more kind of insight into kind of how this world works.
Mm-hmm.
There is, they have their own futuristic murder ball sport.
Yep.
Which, of course, is like a big death sport or something like that. You know, it's a... I'm intrigued, but they are courting this, what's her name? Name her name now.
She's got a very complicated name.
Does she?
I mean, our
Cam.
Our heroine.
Cam. Excuse me.
It's not just Cam. That's...
That's what they call her. I'm
Kamau Kogo.
Yeah,
It's a very unusual name.
But they want her to be involved in the sport because she's obviously, you know, it'd be a good publicity because she's from Bitch Planet and, you know, get the ratings up. But, just the storytelling in this alone, just this panel where they're exercising these pages and then they're slowly going, in the background, they're getting, this fight with all these guards and all these prisoners all at the same time. It
turns into a giant riot.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm really fascinated by this book. I really am enjoying it a lot. It's so good.
It is quite good.
I really love it.
It is quite good.
I like it more just because now there's death sports or future. Any kind of fiction that has futuristic sport, no matter how bad it is surrounding it, I'm intrigued. Like Rollerball.
I was gonna say
terrible.
Who do you think is gonna sing the Rollerball song for this Bitch Planet movie?
I don't know.
Maybe I can do it.
Go ahead.
Bitch Planet!
Jesus Christ.
But, and they call it Thunderball.
No.
An embarrassment to us all. The cat is disgusting. That's the
Andrew's like, get the fuck away from here.
I know.
No, but I really like this. Bye. This is great. Really good. I like it a lot. It redeems my faith in humanity in comic books.
in human comic books.
Eric, say words.
Book good, bye.
There you go. We got it down to three.
Yeah. Oh, you just, what else do you need to say?
It's amazing. It's really good. It's enjoyable. We're sure there's more. Give me some criticism.
What do I need to criticize?
Okay, then. There we go. There's nothing here to criticize. Frankly, I don't. I see nothing wrong with it.
This is Kelly Sue right here. Looks just like her.
It's like a, yeah, it's like a big, giant, angry Kelly Sue.
Yeah. She does wear pink corsets.
I don't think I've ever, I've seen her mostly in Wu-Tang Clan gear.
Wu-Tang Clan?
Wu-Tang Clan. I can't talk, but yes, it seems every time I've seen her, she's wearing a Wu-Tang sweatshirt or something like that.
It's a full-time job buying ironic clothing.
Well, she has a husband that does it for her as well. So she's got help. It's more than a full-time job.
I know. He's her assistant. That's what he's doing instead of rotting Hawkeye.
Rotting?
Well, that's how we say it.
That's how we say it? Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
Me and all the other people that can't talk.
We're double by. Bitch play number two. This is like the most unnecessary review. Well, we're going to read it anyway, so we might as well talk about it.
I will add, if you're sort of on the fence about this book, I don't really even see myself as a Kelly Sue DeConnick fan. I like her as a person. I think her goals are very noble. This is
her best comic.
It is. Without question, it is the best thing that she's ever written. She's clearly very passionate about it. It is very strong, very clear, a lot of fun. It feels like it's going to consistently deliver. So I am more excited for three than I was for two. So, hell yeah.
Double buy!
Double buy again.
Double buy again. Quadruple buy.
Mm-hmm. That's how math works, y'all.
Yep, that's
math.
I'm going to get my calculator out. Yep, checks out.
Amazing. Amazing.
I'm quick on my calculator.
Yes.
I got a watch calculator.
I won. But I've got, this is fine.
This is fine. We're going to move on to Marvel with Spinning Out of Sixus. Events of Sixus.
Thank God Sixus is over.
Yeah, it's over, but we are still feeling the ramifications. They didn't call it All New Uncanny Avengers. I don't know. They seem to do that when they relaunch a book, but just Uncanny Avengers again, but this is, no, it's new number one, Uncanny Avengers number one. Written by Rick Remender, Daniel Acuna on art, Clayton Cowles letters, and Daniel Acuna does all the coloring and inking.
He does a really bang up job.
Yeah.
He did Uncanny Avengers last year.
He did, yeah. He worked on Uncanny X-Force as well. Yeah. Yeah, he's done a lot of
really nice looking stuff.
Yeah, him and Remender worked together a lot.
It's a weird sort of art style. It makes me think of like 70s art and little golden books and things like that. It's a weird sort of way to lay out art, but it really works for these characters and all the books that he's done. Really nice use of color. I don't know. Very, very cool stuff. I think this book is worth it just to see his art. He's probably someone that I should spend more time with because it very consistently delivers.
I didn't know that the Ice King is a character.
Yeah.
In the Marvel Universe.
Oh, dude, he sounds, in my head, he sounds just like the Monarch.
Okay. That too, yes. He is very much like both of those characters.
Calm your body, sweet man.
God.
This sauce is an apple, and it is delicious for your mouth, correct?
God. That's what his line is.
Yes.
That's what he says, and he sounds just like the Monarch.
Yeah, and he's kidnapping women, and...
I mean, of course, he's kidnapping Rogue and smearing blue shit on her face.
Yeah, all I do is, I feel like I had PTSD from Sixus that I don't know if I can enjoy this.
I enjoyed it.
The art, like you said, is very nice. I've always liked Acuna. It's Spanish. It have a Nya sound. Acuna.
It has an Nya.
I think it has an Nya. Acuna. Yeah. But regardless, I don't.
We'll just call him Nya.
The story is very. This is a strange story.
It is a strange story.
It doesn't. I don't. They're going to other. I don't know what's happening necessarily with. I mean, I don't.
We say that every time we read one of these X-Men books. They're so convoluted that you need a fucking atlas to read them.
I like, and they're in Counter-Earth
and
Quicksilver and...
This is the first time I've heard any mention of the fallout of, the two of them no longer being Magneto Spawn.
Yeah.
Why don't you take a moment to talk about this.
About why? Why, what? Why I don't like it?
Know.
I don't...
Well, I mean, how does it make you feel about this book? Does it color your experience? It,
well, I don't... This doesn't... I generally do like Remender a lot. I just don't know what happened. Where I used to like... I liked Uncanny Avengers all the way through. And then Sixes happened. And I don't... It feels wrong. It doesn't feel right to me. Like, Quicksilver, I feel, as a character, I have a good handle on what...
Yeah.
Who he is. And this, like, it just feels like... Like, Quicksilver, to me, always has been a jerk.
Yeah.
He's a jerk. And that's fine. That's kind of why I like him. Because you don't necessarily see
here
a lot of...
Here, he's just his speed gimmick.
He's a speedy, flippant kind of thing. Yeah. It's not...
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's nothing. You don't get any personality.
No.
He's barely even noticeable.
It just, he doesn't feel like Quicksilver. I don't like that they're retconning the Magneto flaw. I think that's such an interesting thing, and that's been such a part of Quicksilver's character, is that he's trying to live up to Magneto, trying to deal with this legacy of having this father who has been evil, good, back and forth, kind of an interesting character in and of itself, and then his... This is what I deal with every time we're recording.
I know, it's hilarious.
We're having some podcatting going on here.
Yeah.
And then the fact that they changed all that, and again, it just seems like such a blatant attempt for them to go, well, we can't use Magneto in the movies, let's separate these characters in the comics too.
No, it's clearly what it is, but it bothers me less, but it's because I have no connection to any of them. I mean, I have more connection to Magneto. I have zero connection to Scarlet Witch or Quicksilver. I in fact, kind of don't appreciate either character.
I really don't. I don't like Scarlet Witch that much.
A lot of
but,
people dislike her.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's there's fervent people against that now. There's like a counter reaction online about, you know, she's great, and they've just ruined her lately because since No More Mutants thing where she was used as a retconning device, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. The story, I guess, is fine. It's strange. It certainly doesn't feel like it ties in. I don't see how it's connected to everything else. But considering everything's going to be like doing a soft reboot in a few months, it just seems. I don't know.
I enjoy the story. This guy. What is he?
Brother,
is he
brother,
called Brother Voodoo.
Brother Voodoo. Yes.
He's borderline like a racist character, but I still think he's kind of awesome in a Jackson Twilight kind of way. Another reference to the Venture Brothers in this book.
He was originally...
Another reference I'm making, anyway. I don't think he's necessarily trying to...
Originally, he was a very racist character, but they are trying to...
I think he's awesome.
No, he's pretty cool. It's just he's not racist in this book, but...
No.
He was conceived originally.
In like the 70s, he was like...
Yeah, he's racist.
I'm not gonna say what's coming through my head. It's not gonna come out.
I would say that on the strength of the art and my faith.
You can dislike this book.
No,
I'm not gonna hold
you. No. It's the story is fine. It's mostly the Quicksilver and the Magneto stuff that's making me, and it's not really fair to the book because the book really barely talks about it.
It's an administrative, it is an editorial decision.
It's
higher up than Remender.
And I like the idea of Sabretooth as like a noble.
Yeah.
He's like Wolverine now.
Wolverine's dead.
So. Wolverine's dead, so we can have a Sabretooth until Wolverine comes back. But I'm like a buy, but a very high on the mush meter. Like,
you want to throw out a number?
Probably five.
Throw out five.
If I'm gonna throw out five.
I'm actually shocked. I thought you would like this better than that, but your reasons are sound. I'm not really that mushy, so I feel I'm a pretty confident buy on this. I like this book.
Okay.
I like this book.
Okay. Then we got. Got double buy, mush meter, I guess we haven't done decimals, but when you have a zero plus a five.
That's a two and a half.
That's a two and a half.
We have done decimals on an average.
Okay, an average. It's an average of two and a half on the mush meter, but you know. Lastly, last Marvel book of the week is Thor number four.
That's like the same word. Wow.
I'm special. Written by Jason Aaron, art by Russell Dodderman. I can't. There we go.
I haven't said it this week, but I want to live inside Jason Aaron's beard.
I know. Matthew Wilson on colors, Joe Sabino on letters and production. This is seeing kind of catching up a little bit with our Odin son, as he is now referring to himself.
Yes,
which I like actually.
No,
it's a good solution.
Well, this is it. it sort of puts to bed all of the internet rumblings of, well, how could she be Thor? But like Thor himself, you know, mm-hmm. it feels calculated that Thor himself is like, I can't do this anymore. I'm no longer worthy to be Thor. You're Thor.
He needs the wake up. Well, I think when Mjolnir rejects him.
Yes.
I think he has the come to Jesus moment.
Yeah.
So to speak. But I'm still really enjoying this book a lot.
This is also the best one so far.
Mm-hmm.
And they've not been bad, but this one is, this is everything really starting to gel. This is excellent.
No, it's
this page in particular.
I think I was about to show you that exact same page. I'm like, look at this page. It's the best.
Oh, but like Thor, what he's saying, I this dialogue.
Yeah.
With every roaring note of the hammer song, I die a little more inside, and the more I die, the harder I swing the axe. That's so good.
It's Thor.
It doesn't get any better than that.
He's got Jason Aaron has a very solid handle. If the entire God of Thunder series wasn't a good enough hint, he has a very good handle on Thor as a character.
Yeah, this is pretty much exactly what I was hoping for when they announced this story, when they talked about Thor's fall from grace. This is what you want to see.
Yeah.
It's working perfectly, and I had my doubts. I couldn't be more pleased with it.
That's very good.
Are you gonna, now that your book is frozen on Thorkiss, do you want to talk about Thorkiss?
We can.
I think it's very cute.
No, yeah.
But I don't know. Are we gonna start shipping
the Thors?
The Thors, yeah.
I'm sure it's already started online.
So what's the amalgam? Is it Thor? The amalgam of the names?
Thor Square?
Thor. I like all of these things, but I don't know. This is very interesting.
No, it's great. The art's beautiful.
Oh Lord, yeah.
And Wilson's colors are the colors of this are
colorful.
Colorful.
Still a lot of blue.
Yeah, well,
a lot of Joe tone in this.
When you're in land of ice and yeah. with frost giants, yeah, blue's kind of omnipresent. But
I like how they tried to. They started out with the red herring of Freya being
yes.
the new Thor, and then
nope.
put that to bed quickly.
Well, I think that Jason has mentioned in interviews that he's going to be, Odin is going to be like detecting, trying to be a detective. I'm like, who is it? And he's like, I really have enjoyed writing Odin trying to be like a PI.
that's good. It's adorable.
By Odin's Ravens.
Yes.
It's a good book. Buy it. It's really good. It's fun. It's great. It's one of the few Marvel superhero books with big names that I'm reading. I'd be reading this despite it. If we were not covering it on the podcast, I'd be reading it anyway.
It's delightful.
Very good. Double buy! No mushy there.
No.
No mushy.
That's 5 for 5, bro.
I mean, that's true. That's true. I don't think I bought other books. I've not read them.
I didn't buy anything else.
I got New Rasputin. Haven't read it yet. And I got a book called Suffragitsu, Mrs. Pankhurst's Amazons.
What the hell?
It's basically like if suffragettes
doing jujitsu.
Yes.
That's a silly idea. That's interesting.
I haven't read it yet, but
did you ever read the Wonder Woman book where she looked like a Gibson girl?
No, I don't think so.
It's not steampunk. Steampunk without the steampunk. It's Victorian, you know.
Right.
It's like, you know, Victorian era Wonder Woman. It's pretty interesting.
With that, Weekly Floppies is over. Floppies part of the week. Gone. Done. Until next week. Then we'll have more books to talk about. Maybe buy, even. Well, we'll be buying them anyway, but, you know, proclaiming them as buys.
That's the way it works.
Very important. We're going to move on to our next segment. It's time for checking in.
It is that time, isn't it?
It is that time. Checking in is part of the show. Eric and I talk about what we've been up to. It's checking in time on Eric's Fitbit watch.
Yep.
I think you're going to have to just add that to your, say, Fitbit watch, because people are like, Kim did not understand what that was a watch as well as a Fitbit. But, Derek, what have you been up to during the week, other than kayaking?
Other than kayaking.
We went kayaking.
A lot. Nothing interesting.
Oh, come on.
Sarah. Do you know what? We could talk about this. This might make for a minute or two of interesting discussion.
Okay.
Have you ever watched even an episode of Kim Possible.
I know the character, but I've not watched an episode.
It is a surprisingly good show. They have a lot of very good voice talent. I think John DiMaggio plays like 3 or 4 different villains in the show.
That doesn't surprise me.
He's really brilliant in it. He's hilarious. Actually, the least interesting character consistently is Kim Possible.
Yeah.
She is... And I think that's by design. It's one of the reasons, like, Harry Potter is very boring.
I was about to throw Harry Potter at you, yeah, so...
Harry Potter is a nothing character.
He's boring.
Well, he's supposed to be flat, and so you project yourself onto him.
Right.
But it's kind of the same thing with Kim. She's just sort of supposed to be... just represent ordinary, like, girl neuroses. Like, oh, I'm so worried. Like, I don't have a date Friday night. I'm going to be sad now. And there's an episode about her not having anything to do.
What is the pretense of the show? What is the...
Do you not know? Okay.
I know she's a spy or something?
Yes. It's really strange. She is a high school student.
Okay.
She is captain of the cheerlead squad, and she's this great student, and all of these things. But in her spare time, instead of getting a job doing babysitting or working at a store or whatever, like her best friend Raven Simone, she goes around the country and helps people with their problems. Mostly they involve like a regular cast of Batman-esque supervillains.
Okay.
Like, her main nemesis is a John DiMaggio mad scientist. John DiMaggio voiced mad scientist named Dr. Draken. Dr. Draken has a sidekick named Shigo that is... she's an excuse for Kim and her to fight Kung Fu every episode.
Okay.
It's pretty good, actually. There's some bits of it that are kind of insufferable, and it's obviously a show for kids, but it has a pretty good, like, nerdcore. That's all these things. It's like Night Court, but with nerds.
That'd be a good show.
I'd watch that.
Well, just give it time. They'll come up. They'll have it. We'll have Nerd Court. It'll be like Judge John Hodgman, except it will be a, you know, nerdy processions exclusively.
Yeah.
Fake court show.
They'll have neckbeard arguments about everything.
Exactly. Mike is Tomb Raider is from the first game is the real Lara Croft.
That's a stupid. Why would you want that character?
I'm just. Clearly. First episode of Nerd Court right now.
I love it.
That's because that's how she was originally designed.
Who gives a shit? New Lara Croft is a person.
She's stupid.
Yeah. I love that this argument is that it has to be told in that voice.
She's stupid. It's like Adam Sandler.
That's good.
Doing his like a...
Anyway, yeah, I can't believe you've never even watched one. There's like a guy that's like, God, he's like Evil Green Arrow, you know? But he's a golfer. Like, he's got little novelty golf balls.
I like that.
That's good. I can't think of what his name is. He's Scottish.
Is it Green Tees?
No, it's not Green Tees. I can't think of his name.
He's Green Arrow.
I think his name is McKilligan. I think that's his name. I really do.
McKilligan.
That's a good name. There's my favorite character. You would love him. His name is Motor Ed. And he's a big, like, hulking dude from New Jersey with a mullet that builds, like, monster trucks and supercars and things. And for some reason, his nemesis is a kid in a wheelchair. I don't know why. I don't understand.
Okay.
The show's got some very strange motifs that it likes to repeat.
Where can I find this show?
All over the place. I mean, DVD's available.
Is it on Netflix?
It is not on Netflix.
Is it on Amazon Prime?
Possibly.
Okay.
You can at least buy it on Amazon Prime.
Buy it? Spend money?
I know.
I have to buy comics.
It's true. We're going broke buying comics.
And $2,000 Simpsons pinball machines.
Well, that's if you're... The $2,000 one you'll have to fix up a little bit.
And the Coke...
You have to buy a giant Coke syrup soda fountain.
Yeah, it's important. Touchscreen. Gotta have that.
It's important.
I'm going to do some research, and we're going to find out how much those cost. Check in next week with update on Soda Fountain 2015.
Soda Fountain Gate. Well, then.
Okay, Eric.
That's enough talking about teenage girls.
Kim Possible. Are you ready for this? I'm gonna lay on you some depressing things about the Royal Rumble.
Okay.
You're gonna be my...
I'm gonna be your sounding wall.
Yeah.
I support this.
It's gonna broach into a larger discussion, I hope.
It's time for wrestling talk.
Things past wrestling, but I'm gonna open it with wrestling because it is the thing that has made me semi-depressed all week. So Royal Rumble was this past Sunday, 1 week ago from the time of recording.
I remember.
Yeah.
We had to record early.
I had to record early so I could set aside time. I record 3 podcasts a week. I edit them. I prepare for them. It takes a lot of struggle of my time. I purposely set aside time in my schedule to watch the Royal Rumble on the WWE Network, $9.99 a month, no commitments, cancel anytime.
Thank you, Vince McMahon.
Yeah, exactly. So I watched the Royal Rumble. It was, we got the first hour of matches are meaningless. Nothing happened of any consequence because really you're there for the Royal Rumble and to a further extent, their championship match. So I watched the championship match comes before Royal Rumble. It's a very good match. Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Seth Rollins. You probably don't know Seth Rollins.
No, I know the name.
He's a newer wrestler. He was in the NXT, and when I was going to house shows in Orlando, mm-hmm. He was coming up through the ranks. He had signed from the Indies to the WWE. The match is great. Great match. Ends with Brock Lesnar winning, as I think it should have ended. It was an amazing match. But then they go to the Royal Rumble. Now, for months now, they have been projecting that Roman Reigns is going to be the winner of the Royal Rumble. Going to be as his right to have a championship match at the WrestleMania as the winner of the Royal Rumble. And he is the Seth Rollins, the aforementioned, was a member with Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose of what they called The Shield, which was a 3-member group. All these 3 guys came up through those ranks together. They debuted together. They were a very powerful stable, very popular by the end of their run. They were very, very good. Seth Rollins ended up splitting apart the group, betraying the other 2 members. Both Dean Ambrose has been by far, and up until a certain extent, was the most popular of the 3 because Seth Rollins was playing a bad guy. He probably would have been just as popular if he wasn't playing a bad guy. But Dean Ambrose was the most popular because he could talk. He's very good on the mic. Roman Reigns has the look. He's a cousin of The Rock. He's 6'3", 250 pounds, Samoan, handsome, blue eyes. You know, he's what Vince McMahon wants as a superstar. But he's not ready. And that's, I think, most wrestling fans that I've talked to don't think he's... Like, he can't carry a match. Like, he's not a good enough wrestler. He's not good on the mic to compensate for any of these things. Like, he just looks really impressive. It's like, when you look at him, you go, wow, he looks like he should be champion. But other than that, so I am a fan of, Roman Reigns is fine. I prefer Daniel Bryan, who just came back. And so last year, there's the same problem. Daniel Bryan everyone wanted him to win the Rumble. Then said Batista came back. Batista is a movie star now. He was in Guardians. Daniel Bryan didn't win. There was a big uproar about it. He ended up, they rewrote things to get him in because there's such a big problem with it. But in this year, it's like, oh, Roman Reigns is going to win. And I don't really have a problem with Roman Reigns necessarily. He's okay. He's not, I don't hate him like I hate John Cena. But I like, you know, Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler, Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt, all these guys. That's 4 I just named who are ready to take the next step. And it's clear to me, and it's clear to many other people online, that they're very popular among any 4 of them. You could have had them win. Or at least, the way the match ended is Big Show. You know Big Show, right? You know,
been around a million years.
20 years now, yeah. Him and Kane, who also has been around for
been around a while.
Long time. They came in, and they're both part of the Authority. Of course, stupid stable thing, but
them and Jenny Sparks.
Yep, exactly. Jenny Sparks. That's Stephanie McMahon is playing the role of Jenny Sparks.
Okay,
she's actually the most interesting member of the Authority, saying something. But what happens is they come into the ring, they knock out. Daniel Bryan gets eliminated early. I guess they wanted to get out of the way so that he wouldn't affect people cheering Roman Reigns, because they want Daniel Bryan to win. So he comes out. He gets out eliminated early by Bray Wyatt. As soon as Big Show and Kane come in, Big Show has his knockout punch finisher, which is him just punching people in the face. Which is, I guess it works because he's a giant man, but punch is not a great finisher. But he punches Dolph Ziggler, punches Bray Wyatt, They don't even get, like, eliminated, like, the normal way, where you, like, you would, you knock them over the top rope with, like, a clothesline, or you throw them over. They get knocked out, and Kane and Big Show literally just pick them up by, like, their arms and legs, and just drop them over the most unceremonious, it couldn't have been clearer, Vince McMahon saying, fuck you guys, you people you like are terrible, Roman Reigns is the best, he's gonna win, I like him, and so fuck you guys. Literally, that's how it felt. Like, watching it, it was like, I was texting both Mike and Eric Steinberg of Steinberg Goodnight and Hawk, yes. I was texting them the entire Rumble, and all three of us were like, oh my god, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Like, you couldn't have made it worse on purpose. Like, if I was trying to design this show to make it worse, I couldn't have done it. Anyway, they get dumped out. All the people I like, just not even a contest, just dump. It's like the hand of God literally just reached down and dropped them out of the ring. And Roman Reigns ends up winning. The people booing Philadelphia, which is a heavy, hardcore wrestling town. ECW was based in Philly, so there's still remnants of that. And it's Philly. They boo Santa Claus famously. So they are booing Roman Reigns ridiculously. And he just won the Royal Rumble, and he's ostensibly a good guy. He should be getting cheered. He's getting booed mercilessly. The Rock comes out. His cousin. Pretty much the biggest superstar there is right now. Probably the most popular wrestler of all time at this point. They still boo. They hated Roman Reigns enough to boo The Rock. I canceled my WWE Network subscription. I can't. Like, I love... And I relate this back to comics. And I want to engage you in this discussion more than you can when wrestling. But wrestling is a thing I defend. It's completely stupid sometimes, and perfectly shown right at this match how terrible it can be. But it also can be great, and I defend it. I spend my money on it. I was a subscriber from day one on the network. I have a drawer full of wrestling t-shirts of superstars who have been long neglected now because Vince McMahon doesn't like them for some reason. And I like NXT a lot. I think that's probably the best wrestling in the world right now, probably aside from maybe New Japan. But I defend comics the same way. And I spend money the same way I do on comics. I put a lot of portion of my spirit into these fandoms. And then when they basically just spit in your face and say, you're not important, we want somebody else to like you. I relate it closely to the most immediately, the Marvel thing of Magneto is not Quicksilver and Scarlet. It's like direct corporate decision making enforced on art. And it's disgusting. And I've overlooked it for wrestling for ever since I started watching it. I just can't, I don't know. Have you had an experience in your life where you were a fan of something and then you just weren't anymore? Because I don't really want to watch wrestling anymore. It bums me out. And I felt this way all week long. Like, I cannot just get enthusiastic about it.
Probably the only thing that I have even a close analog of this would be bands that I like that they make famously, we've discussed this, you know who I'm going to talk about.
Yes.
Is Queens of the Stone Age. I mean Mastodon. I do mean Mastodon.
Yes.
Back in 2006 and for several years was my favorite band. I mean, easily. Favorite band.
They had an amazing run of...
Yeah.
I mean...
First three or four albums were incredible.
The best albums.
Yeah.
Best metal there was and best music there was, really.
Yeah. No, it was fantastic. They were the hottest act. I had friends that, you know, played metal and would tour, and they talked about seeing them play when every other musician on the tour with them would stand on the side and watch them play. And they've changed pretty radically in what seems like a very obvious attempt to become more of a pop band, which doesn't, I mean, it doesn't sit well with me. But it's the unfortunate thing when art gets mixed up with business that you have to make decisions that don't always suit some people, you know, artistically, but may suit a broader audience.
Yeah,
things that capture a lot of people's attention and bring in a lot of money are not necessarily better.
No.
On some sort of artistic level. They just, for some reason, have that special sauce where they appeal to people. And maybe Vince is making the right decision in that light, that this is not stupid and not the thing that's going to offend people like you, but might bring in lots of people to... I don't know.
I don't know either. And that's... I came on this podcast when WWE Network was announced. I said, and it's a very kind of forward-thinking thing where you go, okay, well, people are cutting cords. It's a trend that's going to continue. People, less and less people are going to have cable subscriptions.
Right.
Let's get in front of it and have something ready and have something there already. And then we'll be leading the charge for this, basically. And HBO has recently announced that they're going to have an online-only subscription.
It's been a month or two, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The HBO Go. I don't know that it's not available yet, is it?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know when they're actually wheeling it out for
a regular person. People are really irritated about that.
The executives of satellite and cable, yes, I'm sure they're not a fan, but HBO is at a point where I think they can... Well, kind of do what they want because they have such good content.
It's true. They've done a lot of, they're more, they want to stay with the future, and cable is unfortunately going to become the past really, really very quickly.
Yeah, you don't want to be, you want to be Netflix, not Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to be ahead of the curve, but, and they've used it to, I've watched their pay-per-views, I've watched NXT, but I'm clearly, I feel like I've been a loyal customer, and they're not trying to make, they don't want me as a consumer, it seems, when Vince's, and we say Vince, like, he's in charge, that's the strangest thing about WWE, the fact that they apparently have like 60 writers, yet still, Vince McMahon is the one who decides all creative decisions. Like, he has all these people, but none of them matter.
Well, it's often the way it is with creative companies. Like, what are you going to say when the guy that signs your checks and can fire you without even thinking twice about it is like, no, I have to defend this on a moral and artistic level, you know?
Oh, you're fired.
Oh. No, let's put the guy in there. That's cool.
No, what was it? Oh, Vince McMahon was on Steve Austin's podcast, Stone Cold's podcast. They did it live on the network. It was a big deal. And he explicitly, Stone Cold did not give him softballs. He asked him hard questions about why aren't these young guys being featured more? What do you think the difference is between people today? And he explicitly called millennials, they lacked ambition and they're lazy or something along those lines.
McMahon did.
He used the word millennials, and that's the people who are, I'm a fan of right now, they are our age.
Yeah.
They are the people who are our generation. And the culture of wrestling has changed so much since he was first starting, and even in the 90s when WCW was the big competitor and they had, Ted Turner had millions of dollars to throw at people. Now there's no alternative. You can go to TNA and get paid a tenth of what you'd make in WWE, most likely. You would not make nearly as much money. And what would you do if you were employed by, you got paid six figures, employed by the leader of your industry, and either you could be fulfilled artistically somewhere else for a lot less money, or you could just not be, you could just do what you're told. And the fact is, he says, oh, people aren't reaching, they're not reaching for that brass ring like they used to. Like Stone Cold did, because he was doing an interview with Stone Cold, he even explicitly said that. And people came out and said, that's not, you can't do that. I had a fallback position if I didn't like what you were doing. I could say, I don't like this. I don't think it's right. And I want something to do something else with my character, with me. If Vince said no, or said, I don't like that, and I don't like what you're doing, then he could go, well, I'm going to go to WCW, and they'll pay me as much or more. Now there's no alternative. I don't know. It's very frustrating to me, and I've had to use you as a sounding board.
That's okay. It's interesting talk to me.
Well, there is the, just hit skip 15 seconds, 20 times, you get right.
Is he still saying the words Vince McMahon?
That's just, listen, I'm gonna throw that in like last week.
Yeah.
Braga. We're gonna throw Vince McMahon into the asterisk discussion, and then,
we'll get some strike pants for Vince.
Sounds good.
He'd look really good with some striped pants up to his nipples.
Up to his nipples. That's all you need. I'm surprised there has been a, well, there have been wrestlers that have done that, have done the pants, the high pants. I think the Sheik, Iron Sheik actually did it for a bit.
Excellent.
High pants. Okay.
Feel better?
A little bit, not really. Still hate, I'm not watching WrestleMania this year. Feels wrong, but I'm not doing it. I've made a stand. I'm going to stick with it. There's even trended on Twitter, cancel WWE Network. Time Magazine, or at least Time website picked it up and wrote a little mini article about it. And then the next day, WWE announced, oh, we've had a million subscribers. The WWE Network is a success. No, but then it comes out a week later that that was just cumulative, not at the moment. Yes. And I saw even a very small amount of wrestling fans I follow on Twitter, multiple people canceling. And now February, it's free. You can try it out if you want. I'm not watching. Fuck you, WWE. He lost me. Have someone other than Roman Reigns. Actually, no, fuck you. Have Roman Reigns win the championship. Just go with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier that way. Won't pull me back. You can feel even worse the next time something bad happens. This week in wrestling therapy with Robbie and Eric.
I need like a pipe.
Yeah, this is not a pipe, though. How do you say that in French?
I don't know.
Okay.
But it is. Magritte was French.
There you go.
It's been a very French weekend.
It is.
With some wrestling. As some Kim Possible.
Keep you have to say in that accent.
You do.
Kim Possible. Kim Possible. So, I think that's it for checking in. Enough of that. Enough of that grousing.
Some grousing.
We're going to move on to our final segment of the week. It is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is part of the show. Eric and I assign a longer collected work. Then discuss it in depth like you do in a book club. Except it's comics.
Incredible.
Incredible! Yeah, if you don't like our fake French accents, I'm sorry.
Too bad. Now you have to listen to the rest of this.
Yes, we are doing Asterix 1 through 6.
Asterix!
Written by Goscinny.
René Goscinny and Albert Uderzo.
Yeah, you have to have
feel free to send me an email and laugh at me for that pronunciation.
But when did Asterix originally come out? When was the first Asterix? Like
there.
You want me to pull up the wiki?
René Goscinny died in 1977. So the bulk of all of their work together clearly came out before that death, and this was the main thing that they did.
October 59 was the first.
Yeah, that does not surprise me.
Yeah.
These guys are very, they're OG, for real. Uderzo is in his mid to late 80s.
He's still writing because he sold it to Hatchet.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently they use different, obviously not using the Uderzo or and no Goscinny anymore because he's perished.
Yes.
Passed. So we are doing 1 through 6, which are the Gaul. They're all Asterix and something. So,
yes.
And the Gaul and the Golden Sickle and the Goss, the Gladiator, the Banquet, and Cleopatra.
Mm-hmm. And the Cleopatra.
And the Cleopatra. Asterix is kind of a... throws it around as a landmark, herald, a heritage thing as of comics. Like it's something all artists should be reading. Everyone who likes comics should understand its impact.
Asterix is pretty much the Mickey Mouse of France.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an action comic in addition to, but it's more an adventure comic. It's not about all the violence in it, which it is very violent, but it's very Wile E. Coyote violence.
Yes.
It's very...
Looney Tunes.
Yeah. It's very ridiculous. And he's... Uderzo, they were certainly very influenced. In this book right here, so I've brought, I don't know, some two-thirds of my Asterix collection. Be part of this discussion. In this book, he dedicates something to, right there, to Disney.
To Disney, yeah.
He calls him a famous druid. Which I think Disney's been called worse.
Yeah. Yes.
But very, very influenced. It's interesting to see that, how influenced it is by great American cartoonists. Because there's tons and tons and tons of artists all over. but certainly a lot of the ones that I follow. Like, I was talking to, I think it was Jay Bohm, about Asterix, and he's like, I think this is where my love of puns comes from. I'm pretty sure it's mine. I read a lot of stuff that
is punny.
It's very punny.
Yeah.
And I don't particularly, like, I don't know why that is, but I really do. I think there's just something about your personality. I like people that like puns. Some people hate puns. I like those people too.
Well, that's because you can make them groan.
I know.
That's the best part about the people who hate puns.
It's very true.
Is that you just keep saying puns and then they go,
and then they die.
Like, you inflict pain on them and it's always enjoyable. Always good to hurt people.
It is always good. It's good to hurt people. How do you wanna break this down?
I don't know.
Six stories,
which are, all these are completely unrelated, but if you guys are not aware of that.
Six individual episodes.
Right.
And it looks like these were the first six.
Mm-hmm. 61 through 65.
Mm-hmm.
And they're roughly like 44 page stories, somewhere along those lines, but they're all one-shot adventures. They're not, and it is very much like, it reminds me most of what we've read on the podcast is Scrooge.
It's an adventure story. It is an adventure story in the likeness of your Karl Barks.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Uncle Kino was he's more of a follower of this tradition. You know, Don Rosa is.
Mm-hmm.
So, but still that kind of storytelling to where it's not necessarily about the fighting, or it's about the journey that these characters take, and it's very archetypal in that, like, you know, start out with a problem, travel the world, and come back home.
Yeah,
everyone follows that exact same.
Every single story ends with them eating a banquet, having a feast with the rest of the.
Except Asterix and the banquet. just kidding.
It ends with a banquet and an uppercut.
Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna make the uppercut joke. That's what Gaul's famous for.
The cut of meat, the uppercut?
The uppercut.
Oh, there you go.
So every character's name is a pun.
It is, every single one.
Every character's name.
Cacophonix. I can't remember all the different prefects.
My favorite is Christmas Bonus.
Yes, that was pretty good.
Christmas Bonus.
Why do you think they chose this setting to tell this story?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a national pride thing. I mean, pretty much any Frenchman I have found, I can talk about Asterix, and they're like, they're right there. They know exactly all about it. This is not obscure to French people.
Right.
This is like saying, oh yeah, Mickey Mouse, Steamboat Willie. And you're like, you know, any random person on the street would be like, yeah, Steamboat Willie. Or Superman.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing. It's that kind of cultural meme. So Asterix is Mickey Mouse plus Superman.
Yeah. I do that. I don't know where, I will come to, I don't know where you, when you want to, that, the, it's called Asterix, but Obelix has just as much part in this. I mean, every story has both of them doing everything together.
Yes. Well, they're broing it out.
Yeah, exactly. All the time. It's a team up between the two. And though I think it's that kind of relationship between them, and that the fact that Asterix is considered this special character and he's allowed to drink this potion,
mm-hmm,
and be super strong, and yet Obelix...
Well, do you know Obelix can't?
Yeah, I know, because he fell into it as a baby.
Yes.
And so he already has it all.
No, he's already incredible. He just wants to eat it because he's fat.
Yes, I know. And he wants everything. He's also offended by that as well.
Oh, he hates it.
You mean called fat?
When you call him fat, he loses his shit. It's so funny.
I'm not fat.
He says all kinds of different weird shit. The one in the book that I just read, because I read like six other ones after we read these six. He's like, I'm just well covered. Whatever in the hell that means.
I'm well built. I remember him saying that. I'm well built.
He says all kinds of goofy
and
shit.
And wears pants up his armpits.
Well, I mean, that's how pants look cool like that. Everyone knows vertical stripes are slimming.
You should go out like that. Get a pair of pants. They come up to here.
Yeah, with vertical stripes.
With vertical stripes.
Yeah.
And you'll look so cool. I don't know, this comic, it certainly does feel French. It feels, mm-hmm, very much like the fact that they're the underdogs. Yeah. Like the, and they resent the authority, a figure of the Romans.
The Romans.
Yes. I did, I, but I do think, like, I think you had mentioned that the later volumes are, the 4, 5, and 6 are, I think they are stronger than the first three. I think it's,
yeah.
But they're probably just kind of finding their footing, it seems, you know, when they're.
I think of these six, Asterix and the Goths is probably the weakest. It's not a very memorable story to me. It's just making fun of Germans, which that's something we need to talk about. We can talk about these stories a little bit first, but then we have to talk about that.
About them making fun of Germans?
Well, more than just that. We'll go into that. But you were saying just specifically that the second six.
Yeah, they certainly are more memorable to me. Mm-hmm. Like just having read them, I can recount more specifically the jokes, the things like the gags in those three.
They really were hitting their stride, and they did a lot of very good stuff. But I think that these are probably, this one in particular, Asterix the Gladiator, is quite possibly the best Asterix story that's ever been done. They made one of the best movies out of it, and it that story was my introduction to Asterix. In that we had an old cassette tape, an old VHS of this that we watched a million times, me and my brother. I think he was taking French in elementary school, and his French teacher recommended this, and I was a dirty Frenchman ever since. But it's basically this exact same story, except it includes two different characters. Instead of, because this has Cacophonix being captured.
Right.
The Romans capture Cacophonix and take him to Rome, and he's going to be thrown to the lions. Well, instead, they insert Panacea
is Panacea a doctor?
No, Panacea is the village hot girl.
Oh, Jesus.
Panacea and her fiance, Tragicomix, who looks like He-Man.
Okay.
He's He-Man clone inside Asterix.
Right.
So they put the beautiful people at the heart of the Asterix story to make it sexier, I guess. This movie came out a good bit later than these first couple of books. I don't even think Panacea was even a character, but she didn't exist until much later, until Adairzo was like, I just want to draw sexy women in this book. Just no excuse for it.
I'm just looking at this training.
Oh yeah, no, it's amazing. Every character design is just so inspired. It'll just be some random guy. And like, look at this guy. He's amazing. It's incredible the just level of character that he can inject into these people. Just someone you will never see again. And he's got a face and a style that, I don't know, Adairzo was a genius. Is a genius. Because he's still currently, at the time of this recording, alive.
Yeah, he's...
Just did a Charlie Hebdo reactionary strip.
Right.
But I think that's actually a pretty good cue for what I wanted to talk about, which is...
the Germans?
All of the nationalism and racism in this.
There's a lot of it, yeah.
I mean, this came out in the 60s, so I'm not going to really hold it too against these old men. It's kind of like, would you pick on Will Eisner for... What was...
People do.
Well, I know, but it was... It's dumb. It doesn't make it... For one thing, it already happened a long time ago.
Right.
Yeah, the past was kind of terrible, but it was also a very different time, you know? People didn't value things very the same, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Things are different. It's like, people didn't understand, they didn't interact with other people. French people in particular, like, they've got all these little racist cartoons of, there's, like, Spanish people and, like, I don't know, all these things that you would call a racist stereotype. To them, these are just different European countries that are on an equal footing, so they're going to make fun of them. It's like South Park making fun of Canada. But, you know, it's a little bit different when, like, an American cartoonist draws, like, a caricature of black people, and it's really racist and horrible, because black people are an underclass and are treated like shit in America.
Yes.
So it's genuinely really, really horrible. I don't think it's any less vulgar to do it in Asterix, but it's a different history. They have a different relationship.
Well, we talked a bit about that when we were reading Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. There's that in there.
There is.
Well, it's the same kind of discussion where it's...
It is.
Culturally, it's...
It's a different... Yes.
It's something you can separate the two. Mm-hmm. The artistic merit, but you obviously understand that the racism and nationalism is problematic, but you have to... You read it into it. You take that with it and see it and kind of, I don't know, use it as a learning tool almost. Mm-hmm. You go, well, see why it's problematic, why it's...
Yeah, and that's what they recommend for people, like, you know, when you're watching, like, an old cartoon, you're supposed to... I think it was Leonard Maltin was describing, like, old Disney cartoons.
He actually, on his podcast, they were talking about animated movies, and Dumbo is his favorite one of his favorite movies of all time.
And the Crows,
and he's talking, and his co-host is a black guy, a comedian, and he, you know, he's like, yes, obviously it's problematic, and this is why... But I still love this movie.
Yes.
Yes.
But it's, he really laid it out in the interview I saw. He was talking about, like, De Fuhrer's face. Are you familiar with the Donald Duck cartoon?
Yes, I think so.
Where he starts screaming, Heil Hitler. And he says, like, you know, this was, you just sort of have to explain to kids. You know, you don't want to hide it from them, but you explain this time period. And people were caught up in this nationalism, you know, this sort of patriotism and racism. And it's... You want to more explain it. You don't want to look away from it, because that gives it much more power. It's like not saying Voldemort's name.
Yeah, and it's like the thing I always relate back to it is how Germany handles World War II and the Holocaust. They don't shy away from it. You are taught it explicitly as a child. If you're a German child, mm-hmm. you are taught explicitly what the Holocaust was, how it happened, and why it happened, and Germany's role, and the average German's role in it. And that is to serve it, to prevent it, something like that happening again. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the one thing that I always try and relate back to about why you should make it things like this a teaching point and not try and just ignore it. Which America is not good at all.
No, we're not. We cover it up, we hide it, and we say, you can't watch that. It's not really a good idea. I agree with you on that.
Okay, I need to talk about Dogmatics.
Tell me about Dogmatics.
Dogmatics is the best.
Is it
Dogmatics? My favorite.
Why is that? There's a lot of good stuff.
Because he's so tiny.
He's very little.
And I think that's my favorite thing about that. Obelix is like this giant man, and he has a little tiny dog that he gives piles of bones to.
Dogmatics loves bones.
I like the...
This is the part where in this book even, where the royal taster is eating a bone so Dogmatics can eat it.
Yes.
I like that gag a lot.
And Dogmatics drinks the magic potion and chases away the big dog.
That was very cute. That was in this book, too.
It is, yes.
I think in this book.
Yes, Dogmatics, I think, he makes his first appearance in...
Is that really his only appearance?
I think so, yeah. I don't think he's in any of the other ones.
I find that shocking. I think he's in it, sort of in the background.
Yeah.
Like, they're just hanging out in Gaul.
I do think it's clever how they use the Egyptian pictograph, or whatever you want to call it.
They use a lot of hand lettering in these, and I can even show you, because I have... The German edition, it's all typeset. Just look cold this is.
Yeah, it doesn't look very good.
No, it doesn't. But it's all, but, like, when you look at, I mean, it's all, wait a minute, this is also, excuse me.
Yeah, we're juggling multiple editions of these books, all in different languages, because Eric's a lunatic who buys...
I was going to say, I'm a lunatic.
He buys German and French editions of comics you can't even read.
This is some straight up beautiful...
This is the French.
This is some great comic lettering, but you can see it'll be the same when he's, this is the same translation there. But if there was someone speaking German or anything other than, you know, Gaelic, it is also hand lettered.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating that they went to that length. You know, it really makes things feel nice and rich and like... You're missing some gestures.
Yeah, we have. We're being stupid,
as we want to.
Yeah, we do that a lot. I think something that is back to, I think it's just the adventure story kind of, I don't know, formula. The density of storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so, like, you don't think, like, oh, it's not that much. It's like 40 pages of a story. So it'd be like two issues of a comic book. Two issues of our current, of a...
These old school storytellers, it was... Well, we say decompressed storytelling now.
Yes.
Something that it's very cinematic. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll have like half of a page is like a guy lighting a cigarette and throwing his thing away.
Yeah.
And what does that really tell you? Oh, he smoked.
Yes. It looks very beautiful. It does not communicate a lot of information necessarily about the character or the story.
If you read anything about comic storytelling by Eisner, he is not a fan of decompressed storytelling. And he's like, well, this is not a movie, it's a comic. But I mean, I don't think you're necessarily obligated to tell tons and tons of story, but it certainly does make, like, you know, a $10 book feel like you're getting a lot more.
Well, because you're taking...
Yeah.
And it serves... And we talk about, you know, the decompressed storytelling about... If it's, like you said, just a big panel of a dude lighting a cigarette and throwing away a match or whatever, your eye naturally will... You will look at the art, you go, oh, it looks pretty.
Yeah.
But your eye won't stick to it as long.
Yes.
You'll just... Okay, I grasp what this is telling me, I move on to the next panel. This... When this kind of super dense storytelling... It makes you look at the art longer, and you actually end up appreciating it more because your eyes are sticking to a panel for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. As long as the text bubbles aren't covering up, and there are these guys are pros in that the speech bubbles are generally not they're letting the high detail, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, it's larger printing too.
Yeah,
when you look at the actual books,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't translate too great to a tablet or your computer screen,
no.
But these are like magazine size, really.
Yeah.
Not regular comic size, but it's really the best way to appreciate them, even with the rougher printing on these old editions, this new edition.
It pops out way more than reading on my tablet, because mm-hmm. I read the first three, or four on my tablet, and then Eric showed up and I read his... print editions, and the larger format does serve it.
Yes.
Definitely.
I mean, there's all kinds of... I mean, Derzo really is a hell of an artist. I mean, when you look at scenes like this,
yeah.
and drawing, like, I'm not going to say that they're all perfectly historically accurate.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, for the sake of gags or for the sake of not being able to do perfect research or have a time machine, that it can't be 100% perfectly accurate, but you still get a great sense of this time period, which is, I don't know about you, I know I'm very fascinated by, you know, the sort of golden age of Rome. I've always found these people very, very interesting. One of the main reasons I love Asterix so much. And I think there's, you know, even though the nationalism, the racism is problematic, like, I think there's certainly a level of respect for it that these books are kind of educational. That, you know, like, I just read one about Asterix going to India, and there's some seriously problematic things in it. To where there's some stuff that just feels completely made up, but they name a bunch of things that are legitimately true about Indian culture, and every character throughout all the books, like, they have their own gods and religion, and they all name them out. And there's a lot of research and legwork that's done in there, you know? They're a product of their time, but they're very certainly, They're done with love and they're educational, so I don't think that it's all bad. Yeah, you'll never know what a Mynheer is. No one. I think that's the gag. Maybe these things exist in France, and they're like, what the hell is this? So they just thought it would be, well, how will we know?
Now's the perfect time for my internet, so whatever, it'll be okay. Yes, they mention Mynheers a lot. Mynheer.
Mynheers.
Obelisk. Carries one around for
yep. Well, he's the veneer craftsman of the village. Yes. And he delivers them. He makes them and delivers them.
Well, that's very important.
And they never explain what they are or what they're for.
I think they're... It doesn't matter. I want to say they're like the big giant rocks you'd see at Stonehenge.
They're like that.
Yeah, I think that's...
They're completely...
They're ceremonial rocks.
Yeah, they... But it's really unclear. And maybe these things do exist in France. I don't know. And maybe it's like, what the fuck is this?
And maybe I don't... like. And, but the fact that they use it so much, mm-hmm. it seems like there's some kind of gag that I'm not getting.
I have never understood it, but it's always funny that he's like the Incredible Hulk, and he's walking around. Like, every time Panacea is in the book, he tries to give her a veneer. And, like, they would crush anyone. And he's just like, he's holding his palm.
I think that's the best thing about Obelix. He's the strongest man on earth, and he doesn't realize it.
He doesn't have a clue.
I do like when he finally gets a couple drops of the super strength potion, and it crashes through the pyramid, through the stone parts of the pyramid, and he doesn't know, he can't tell the difference, because of course not.
No, he's I don't know, he's an invincible juggernaut.
He's very much like a Little John. Well, reminds me of Little John and Robin Hood a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The big giant brute that is, you know, a simple person, simple man.
He's simple. He likes to...
He likes boars. And that's plural. He likes boars.
He likes a lot of... Motherfucker eats some pork.
Yeah, he does. Those, I don't know how they still have boars in Gaul.
They're going extinct.
He eats so many.
Yeah. There's a book that I just read where... it's funny you mention... The story about the whole plot point that he can't have any of this magic potion.
Mm-hmm.
He has magic potion against the druid's wishes. He drinks a whole cauldron of it, and he turns to stone. And they try and cure him. Nothing works. And eventually, he finds a cure for him, but it turns him into a little boy. And he spends the whole rest of the book lamenting that he's not a big giant man. And, like, he orders 3 boar for dinner, and he can only eat one of them, and he's really unhappy about only this. One he's, like, he's like, what's wrong with me? I'm like, this is so sad.
I can only eat one whole boar. No better way to enjoy the antics of our indomitable hero, his friends.
Indomitable.
There is a veneer. This is also a veneer.
That's a big veneer.
It is a veneer. What do you think? There's some, or is this all just kind of them poking fun? Like, the obviously the main antagonists of all these stories are the Romans.
Yeah, yes.
And they're always like these. Do you think there is something behind the fact that it's these savage, uncivilized men, and yet they are, you know, but they are always ending up on top of these intelligent, you know, these world builders, these empire leaders of Caesar and all these Romans. Is there, you think there's something there, or is it just a simple kind of underdog story, and we are naturally inclined to root for the underdog?
It's difficult for me to really dissect if there's any other layer to this, like you're describing.
Well, it doesn't help that we're reading translations.
Right.
Unless
there's probably a lot of things. I imagine there's tons of jokes that just make no sense, and they just sort of transliterate it and just make up whatever.
Right.
Like, one of the editions, and I showed it to you earlier, one of the editions that I have that's in French, some nerd has been trying to translate the jokes and has written them all in the margins, so I have this asshole's, like, pen and pencil marks forever.
I don't know if it's an inherently a French thing. They're just, like...
And I think maybe you're right when you think about, like the French Revolution,
right,
and the whole rebellion against the aristocracy.
Right.
When you look at it through that lens, it does sort of make sense.
Well, I mean, even
it is sort of part of their national idea of, like, the simple, you know, the simple man really being the heart of the country and rebelling against, like, I guess rebellion against authority really is part of their culture.
Well, I think that's at least Americans' understanding of the French, is that they don't give a shit about, like, you know, they do what they want, and they don't care about other people's opinions necessarily. And I think that this is, I don't know if it's just implied, or since it's a French comic, that they're so ingrained in that culture that we can't really, and the fact that we're reading through its translation, there's all these layers of
obfuscation there.
Yeah, of boundaries that we can't necessarily even try and intuit in any kind of level simply because we don't have the cultural understanding of living in France or being French. It just feels like it's there because it's like, you know, it's always, I mean, I guess it makes sense. You look at a lot of archetypal adventure stories that they're told like this, where you are the underdog is the protagonist and there's some indomitable force as the antagonist, and yet they find a way to come out on top. I mean, I'm just trying to think of like in Bugs Bunny cartoons, we root for Bugs Bunny. Yosemite Sam is the villain, Elmer Fudd is the villain. Like these hunters,
these NRA activists.
Yes, NRA. Exactly.
Charlton Heston. Is a Bugs Bunny villain.
He kind of is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. We talked about we talk about the racism. Look at that shit. Jesus Christ.
It's all the black people. And even in the more positive, like after the civil rights in America.
Yes.
And after the death of Goscinny.
Mm-hmm.
When D'Arezzo started writing and drawing the books, but still publishing them as Goscinny and D'Arezzo.
Right.
And a Goscinny and D'Arezzo presentation. He started to try and make amends for it, but he was still an old man.
Right.
Trying to... I mean, it didn't come... Like, there's one where he tries to give a more feminist slant to the book, and they solve the problem at the end of the book by tricking a cohort of female soldiers from Rome into going shopping. Like, that's how the story is resolved. So it is, I mean, it's like your grandpa trying to be less racist, but he's still your racist grandpa.
Yeah, yeah.
They
can't help it at a certain point.
No, they can't. They're from another time. You gotta give them at least partial credit. They don't mean it badly. They just don't know how to do it any different. But anyway, I was gonna say that there is a book where there is a fairly positive black character, but he still looks like that.
Yeah.
He still looks like the racist caricature from the 20s.
Yes, exactly. What the fuck is I going with that?
I don't know. We were talking about something else.
No, I'm trying to remember.
And then we start talking, we just point at racist cartoon character on the cover.
Oh,
we were
God.
Talking about French identity.
Yeah, and, yeah.
And
I was,
all the layers. Of...
It's probably partially that, and also partially that legacy of cartoons, and like you always are rooting for the underdog, and storytelling works best when the protagonist is an underdog for the most part, or you know they have some when you have some kind of noble hero, then it's generally about a flaw or there some struggle even, but. Especially these adventure comics. I mean, like, I'm trying to think of other... I guess especially when it's more like the science hero ideal, that archetype that we see in Tom Strong nowadays and Fantastic Four and all that, where that's more rooted in something wrong with the hero, like something they have to overcome inside.
Yes.
While these types of stories are more about an external force, an external antagonist that is, you know... Oh, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say... We are talking about all these racist and problematic things inside of these books, and yet the villain of the book is Caesar.
Yes.
Who's not...
Well, he's he's an Italian guy, but he's effectively presented as whitey.
Yeah, he's effectively, like, so it's strange, like, it's strange to me that we are talking about all this, the racial and issues with it, the problematic nationalism and stuff, and yet... The villain is this kind of super white guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a lot of situations, like when they're making fun of Hispanic people in Europe, or they're making fun of, they're very merciless about British people.
Right.
They
yeah.
think British people are the funniest thing. But it's like I said, they're on a different level. I mean, they're not making fun of, They're not making fun of poor, like, immigrants that have nothing coming from, like, Mexico or Colombia or something.
Right. They're
making fun of the country next door that is now sharing a same currency, or there's, like, It's a very different environment.
The relationship between them culturally is difficult to parse as us being Americans when we're not familiar with that at all.
Yeah.
We've never had neighbors. I mean, we're finally getting it now, really, with Mexico. Mexico's finally becoming a world power with the amount of oil they have, basically.
And all the drugs.
Well.
All their powerful, powerful drug lords. Jesus Christ.
But, I mean, it's... Even Canada has never been like... We pat Canada on the head. Like, yeah, you're polite and nice. But even then, they're just like, oh, they're nothing. It's not like... Because Canada doesn't have any of the natural resources. They're
I think, really, the thing is they're not really a whole lot different from us.
No, they're not.
They're like us, but nicer.
Yeah.
Like, really, they're like us, but nicer and less ethnically diverse.
Yes, that's very true. It's Canada.
All of these tropical people, they do not want to go to Canada. You're not going to see a guy from Venezuela or Ecuador. They're not going to go to Vancouver.
I'd like to visit Vancouver.
I would love to, but
okay, yeah. What else do you want to talk about here?
We've not even talked about anything in the stories.
I know.
Do you want to?
We should, but we've already been over this over half an hour. We've been talking this for a long time already.
We don't have to.
Explicitly, anything you want to mention explicitly about these stories that you feel is worth discussing? With these six stories? We've touched on certain things in the stories as we've gone along. But, I mean, they are a typical kind of, like you said, archetypal adventure stories, where there's a problem, they go out to somewhere, they fix it, and they come back home, and there's a party.
Yeah.
And it works fine. I don't think the stories are, it's a vehicle for the cartooning and the humor, and and the puns, and like, the wordplay in it is very clever, it's very smart.
It's amazing that as much of it works.
In English. That's what I was surprised by, honestly.
Yeah. But, I mean, Asterix and Obelix, those puns are pretty much completely untouched.
Yes. And they work.
It is interesting that it works. And I guess it's because they have the same root.
Right.
You know?
I think that's...
Obelisk. Asterix. That's asterisk, excuse me. It's not even... The word is barely changed.
Yeah. I don't know who ends up translating these. It's probably credited.
But there's a couple of different ones.
Anthea Bell, Derek Cockridge.
I have the first omnibus right here, and it is possibly a different translation. Part of it has been relettered compared to the old editions. The one that is in your right hand, Asterix the Gladiator, is one of the original British translations from the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the translators deserve a lot of credit for managing not to maul it. You know,
they've done a pretty fairly good job, yes.
But I mean, it's the stories themselves aren't necessarily like they're very kind of adventure story tropey kind of thing, where like the titles kind of tell you what Asterix becomes a gladiator. I think the content, like the fun part about the stories, is the fact that they do play against stereotypes, play against what you expect, especially in Gladiator, where he organizes the gladiators and forms the gladiator union, where they want to just play like party games.
Yeah, they were playing charades. It was very adorable. Caesar did not like that.
No,
he
Caesar
was right pissed about it.
Yes, he was. He was very upset. But and I like all the stories that I don't know. They're you know. It's,
I think that the, one that that I th- that that. This story of Asterix and the Banquet.
And traveling around.
Well, they're basically... This is like, possibly the best example of French nationalism. Because it is... It's them... It's an excuse for them to talk about all these real places in France. And all the food that they make.
And
that they're renowned for.
Yes.
Like, I literally ate one of the foods last night at a French restaurant because I read this. I ate bouillabaisse because they don't say bouillabaisse, they just say fish stew. But it's clearly bouillabaisse, and it's made by... This is the most French-looking person I could possibly imagine. I love this guy.
Yeah, he's very... Those dudes are very French-looking.
They're pretty remarkable. But it's... I don't know, man. It's... These books are remarkable. I mean, I could read Asterix the Gladiator anytime. It's amazing. It's absolutely fantastic. Ederzo is, I don't know, probably top five of my favorite cartoonists of all time, and that is a lofty list in my eyes. He is about as good as it gets.
No, they're really wonderful. They're a lot of fun. They're very fun and adventure books.
You can really tell this is exactly how Don Rosa draws horses.
Mm-hmm.
They look exactly like the horses that Ederzo draws. Probably the guy that does Lucky Luke, too. I've already forgotten his name. I think it's Morris. It's Morris. He's like Mobius. He's just Morris.
Large, upright, standing stone.
Of course it is.
Yeah, there you go.
You should. I've never looked at the menhir on Wikipedia. I bet it says they don't really know what it is.
50,000 megaliths in this area, in particular Ireland, Great Britain, and Brittany. Yep. Western Europe. 1,200 menhirs in northwest France alone. Mm-hmm. So, there.
Obelix was busy.
Yeah. The word menhir was adopted from French by 19th century archaeologists. A combination of two words found in the Breton language, men and her. In modern Britain, the word pulvin is used. So there's your anthropology lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, at home.
Inside this cat.
And we have a kitty. We have Danger Mouse is now rubbing her head against the microphone.
It's very adorable, but probably isn't good for the sound.
No, it's probably not great for the sound. Come on, Danger. Off the table. Come on, jump on here. Come on. There you go. So this week we have Asterix 1-6. Definitely suggested, probably eventually. You can find it in print. Unfortunately, not really readily available digitally.
It's a little tough. There's no good Comixology source for it. It's a little tough to track down.
It's not on Kindle or anything like that either. It's not. There's no. You can find it on, there's a website I found called asterixonline.info, which has all of it, but I do not know how legal it is. It hasn't been pulled down, so.
It's probably pretty illegal.
Probably, but.
These are fairly out of print, but I know anyone that does cartooning or likes cartooning, they have a couple of these on their shelf.
Yeah, you can find them,
You can certainly get on Amazon.
Yeah, you can get the books on Amazon when they're in stock,
yeah.
Which they weren't this week, but, excellent books, very good, fun adventure stories, very funny.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable. I need more dogmatics in my life.
Do you know that he hates it when people knock down trees?
He does?
He hates it when people knock down trees. He howls and cries.
Aw, poor dogmatics.
Sometimes Obelix forgets and knocks down a tree and makes dogmatics sad.
Aw, it's upsetting.
In the movie, Dogmatix goes with them to Rome.
Next week, Nerdboy Book Club, we are doing Battle Angel Alita. Was it 9 volumes, Eric?
Do you want to do...
Okay, so we're doing Battle Angel Alita by... Can you say his name correctly, Eric?
His name is Yukito Kishiro.
We are going to do... There's
by that guy.
That guy. Yeah, I can't say his name. We're going to do all 9, but we're going to split them up. We're going to do Splitsville, 5 volumes for next week, and then the final 4 volumes for the week after. But concern yourself with the first 5. This is one of Eric's favorite things.
This is why we're reading all of them.
So it will be particularly enjoyable to me when I hate it, and then I can make fun of him Good. For liking something.
Good. I'll come back down here and punch you in the arm again.
More likely is I'll enjoy it, just not as much as him.
Yeah.
It's probably how it'll go. But either way, I'm excited to read it. I'm interested. Eric's going to twist my arm and read some more of this Japanese stuff. Make me read things from other countries like France, Japan.
Jesus.
International influence terrorists. That's what I call them.
I know.
From other countries, terrorists.
There we go.
Yeah, there we go. But with that, I think we can call it a day. We've been talking for quite a while.
Blabbing on and on.
We are the Hints Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at HintsBoysComicsHour.com. You can find everything there. Find us on iTunes, podcatcher of choice. Like us, rate us, review us, subscribe us. All those things. It helps us out. We really do appreciate it. Eric will give you a nice hug if you do one of those things.
I'm a hugger.
Not a face hugger, though.
That would be weird.
It would be weird. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/HintsBoysComicsHour. On Twitter, @HBCHour. Email us, handsboyscomics@gmail.com.
You can,
find me on Twitter @MixmasterCereal. It's MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
I thought you were going to pass out there for a minute. Well, you can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com and see all the other junk I get up to online. I almost said the junk in my internet trunk. That's a missed opportunity. All the other stuff I do online by going to ericzgoodnight.com, including my Tumblr and my Pinterest. You know, I'm a pinning madman. You can tweet me. You can tweet at me by going to Mr. Bad Example on Twitter. MR Bad Example.
With that, call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.